Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little boy named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. Thanks for supporting us for the past 100 episodes. Don't forget to subscribe and give us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also support us by visiting our Patreon page, where you can find out how you can join us for our monthly patron webinar, where we do a deeper dive discussion about all things perimenopause.
The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast. It's Dr. Lisa with Dr. Tony again. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Lisa. Good to be with you today.
I'm so excited to chat with you today. We're going to talk about why you can experience more pain in perimenopause and menopause. This is often a symptom where women are taken by surprise. They're wondering, why am I all of a sudden having these aches and pains that I didn't have before? A lot of times they're told, you know, it's just chalked up to age. And we're going to give you some actual reasons why pain is worse during this transition time and even going into menopause. It is what we call musculoskeletal pain. So this is the muscles, the bones, the nerves, the tissue. It's one of the most severe complaints in women undergoing menopause. And about 71% of perimenopausal women experience this musculoskeletal pain. And it can be a progression. You know, you might not have much pain in premenopause, so even before you start going through perimenopause, and then through perimenopause. And as we get older, the pain can get worse. And it has to do a lot with our hormones. We've talked about all of the fluctuations that happen with our hormones in perimenopause. And the hardest thing for our body and our brain is those hormonal fluctuations. It's like when our hormones and the estrogen is kind of up and down all the time. And when it drops or it's fluctuating, this is when we experience pain. It influences so many systems in our body, which we're going to uncover. But I'm just giving you a high-level overview here. We've talked before about how progesterone is anti-inflammatory. It supports the muscles, like relaxing. It's our chill out hormone. It helps us sleep. And progesterone's typically declining more consistently, where that estrogen is up and down, still on a decline, but fluctuating so much in perimenopause until you get to menopause and it's really low. And we know testosterone levels decline through this time period as well. And testosterone can actually increase your threshold for pain, meaning you can experience more pain without it impacting you as much. If you have a lower threshold, you're going to be more sensitive to pain. So all of these components are working together. And we're going to unpack this a little bit more, right? And there's things you could do. So I don't want you to be like, oh my gosh, it's all downhill. I'm just going to be in pain for the rest of our life. Well, we're here to tell you there are solutions, right, Tony?
Absolutely. I think this topic, Lisa, is again something that we've kind of talked amongst between us about, like, okay, we need to talk about this, because so often, again, women will have more of those musculoskeletal complaints as they get older. And I really dislike that piece of like, well, you're just getting older. It's just wear and tear. You know, you just have to live with it. There's nothing you can do about it. Or even the, it's just in your head. It's, oh, for women out there to know, and for us to know that, again, there are these links. Our hormones are involved. It's not just in our heads. It's not just, especially women have been so dismissed overall about different health concerns. Unfortunately, just to have this information out there so that women know, okay, it's not just in my head. This isn't just, again, something that I'm making up or, again, perceiving differently. There are things that you can do about it. And of course, from a naturopathic point of view, Lisa, we do look at all of the different factors in our life and physically that does make a difference. So again, you know, everyone is going to be different. And this is where absolutely, you know, we can kind of go over some links and provide, you know, some possible options, but definitely this is one of those pieces where getting that personalized assessment and personalized, treatment is really important too.
Definitely. And then throw on the symptoms of perimenopause, right? You may be getting hot flashes or you're not sleeping because of that or other reasons. And we know sleep, you know, if you don't sleep enough or good quality, you're going to have more pain. And if you have more pain, then that might impact your sleep. And it can be this whole cycle. We've talked about the mood changes in perimenopause and depression and anxiety. You know, serotonin and the neurotransmitters are impacted, but we're realizing these mood disorders are a lot of the times inflammation in the brain too. So if our mood is off, we have more pain. If we suffer from anxiety and depression, we're more likely to experience pain. So it's so complicated. And even we've talked about that sarcopenia, that muscle wasting as we age, that's a progressive process. But as we lose muscle mass and it's harder to build muscle, there is going to be more strain on those joints, right? The muscles help to have things move properly, to not put wear and tear as much on the joints. So we've talked about how to maintain and slow that sarcopenia, because that's also going to add on to it as well. And then throw in all the stress of doing all the things. We know cortisol is anti-inflammatory, and we need the right amount at the right time. So it can be, unfortunately, the perfect storm, but we're going to unpack what's happening.
Absolutely. And now, the idea of talking about pain, well, you know, what is pain? You know, it is, and there's different causes for pain. You know, overall, you can think of it as you are getting information that something is out of balance, or especially when we're talking about like acute pain or injury or inflammation, you know, that's really serving to protect an area from further damage. It is an immune response. And then we get this information from different receptors in our body. So especially when it's, again, linked with acute pain, you know, a one-off an injury, that's one thing. When we're looking at chronic pain, that can be a whole other ballgame. And there's different types of pain. Again, we're really focusing on the musculoskeletal pain, but you know, you also need to be aware that there can be nerve pain, there can be pain from infection, there can be visceral pain, other kind of issues, central pain syndromes, complex regional pain syndromes that have to do, you know, with brain, with spinal cord, with other pieces. We're not necessarily covering all of that in this podcast episode. So, you know, really to be aware of that. But oftentimes, especially when it comes to the what's impacting our muscles, our ligaments, our tendons, our joints, our bones, we are looking at inflammation, and we're also looking at how that inflammation is impacted by our hormones, by other things that are happening with our metabolism and you know, with our biochemistry as well.
Definitely. And looking at, you know, the lack of sleep, it's huge, right? Because it not only impacts kind of the natural pain relievers that we produce, it impacts our melatonin, which is anti-inflammatory. It influences all of these systems in our body so that we're set up to experience more pain. We're going to feel more achy, right? I know myself, if I only get 6 hours sleep, I'm going to feel it the next day. I'm going to feel like I'm more sore, like I'm fighting something off. So if we have a sleep deficiency, it deactivates several systems that have pain reducing properties, like I mentioned. So the opioid system, melatonin system, dopamine signaling. And then it also activates systems or substances that increase the sensation of pain in our body, like nitrous oxide and adenosine. These are all, we don't have to go into all of these, but there's more inflammation, more inflammatory mediators. And we also know that having an increased BMI or increased weight, you know, doesn't mean, you know, if you're a bit overweight, you're going to have more pain, but we know fat cells are basically accessory inflammatory organs, and we have more cytokines. These are inflammatory substances being produced. So if we're gaining some weight, we can have more of these inflammatory substances circulating around our body. So we feel pain as well. So that can be, you know, we are noticing body changes. Fat cells can also make estrogen. So, you know, potentially, maybe we do need a little bit more weight as we get into perimenopause, and especially menopause, when our estrogen pretty much tanks. But we want it to be at a level that's not going to add fuel to the fire of that chronic inflammation, which is when it becomes a problem. Because as you mentioned, Tony, yeah, inflammation and pain is protective, right? If you touch a hot stove, you sense it. That's pain as well. Temperature, extreme temperatures. So you withdraw your hand and you're safe. But let's say you couldn't sense that, and if people have different nerve issues, then they don't sense the heat. They actually burn themselves and cause damage to the finger, to the nerves, to the tissue, and then it becomes a problem, right? But a lot of times we have all these mini kind of stimulations adding up that then contribute to inflammation, and then we're more prone to pain from things in our environment, from maybe our workouts. I see so many women push workouts so hard during perimenopause because their body is changing and they want to lose weight. So they're working out hard 6 days a week. We need that rest and recovery. And sometimes we need to not push it as hard to actually benefit more from our exercise, because exercise is inflammatory as well. As long as we heal and repair from it, we're basically micro tearing our muscles with the movement so that they build and repair and get stronger. And we need that rest and recovery time. So that can be part of it too. Like I know, Tony, if I work out too many days in a row, and especially if it's before my period, oh my gosh, it takes me so long to recover. I feel so achy and sore, and it impacts just even my focus and my energy and concentration for the day.
Definitely, Lisa. I mean, there's that piece of, you know, everything that you mentioned of, you know, how we can be more sensitive to pain, that pain can be stimulated from, you know, not enough sleep, over exercise. And unfortunately, you know, we can get into these vicious cycles where, you know, we can be feeling more pain, then there's a natural hormone release of more of our stress hormone cortisol, more adrenaline, more of our precursor kind of sex hormone, which is pregnenolone. Then that, again, has a certain response. If our pain isn't well controlled, that continues to happen and continues to happen. Like, again, if we have poor sleep, if we keep pushing through things, you know, if we don't have that rest and recovery, then again, you know, our adrenal glands that produce that cortisol and adrenaline, then they get exhausted. They're not able to produce that same level of cortisol and adrenaline. Then we can really get into burnout with low levels of cortisol, low levels of that master sex hormone, pregnenolone. And then we're in trouble because we need a daily circadian rhythm of cortisol. And if we're not getting enough, if we're overstressed, that then reduces that anti-inflammatory action of cortisol. If we don't have, you know, that natural precursor of the pregnenolone, then we have less production of progesterone. And again, as we go through perimenopause and we naturally are decreasing our progesterone levels, then we're not having that benefit of that natural anti-inflammatory in our body. I was really interested. I saw was a very small study done in women who have fibromyalgia. So again, that's where you do have that sensation of musculoskeletal pain. And they were tracking a few women, and they saw that there was these daily fluctuations of pain severity that really corresponded with daily fluctuations of both progesterone and testosterone in women. So again, there is this hormonal piece, and we have to be aware, you know, how our stress, how our sleep, how our activity will influence that, especially as we're in perimenopause going into menopause. That, as well as there's a few really key nutrients that are important. Again, we've talked about vitamin D before, how vitamin D is not just a good vitamin for our bones and for, you know, keeping us healthy and having a healthy immune function in, you know, the cold and flu season. We just talked about this recently, Lisa, but also that vitamin D is anti-inflammatory. It and our vitamin D is converted and used up faster in our body when we have more pain and inflammation. Even something like iron that we've talked about in the podcast before, we need enough iron for tissue repair. So again, if there is that damage from injury or accident, we need that, or again, we're going to have issues with pain. Also, even our minerals and our electrolytes are really important for that signaling in our body. So if you're not getting enough of those minerals, if you're not getting enough calcium, sodium, magnesium, potassium, those can have issues as well too.
For sure. Yeah. All great points, Tony. And you listeners may be wondering, like, how do they measure pain, right? Because it, you know, there is a subjectivity to it because nobody knows what you're experiencing. Only you know. But they actually have two different menopausal questionnaires that they use that also include questions about pain. The one is called the Menopause Specific Quality of Life Questionnaire, MenQOL, Quality of Life. This has been used in several studies. And the Menopause Rating Scale, MRS, has been used in more studies too. It also depends on which scale they use, because one can rate higher in pain than the others. But, you know, as long as you're comparing, you know, you rate the pain and fill out the questionnaire before you do an intervention or support, and then you fill out the same one. You just want to see how that pain changes. And all the studies do that, right? They start with the same questionnaire. There's the intervention, whatever it is, or there's a time period that goes by, and then they redo the same questionnaire and compare it over time. So it's pretty fascinating in that respect. But you can get different tests to measure the level of inflammation in the body. We've talked about this before. Getting what's called a C-reactive protein, CRP. ESR is more of a general one. Urethrocyte sedimentation rate is what that stands for. These are markers of inflammation, getting that complete blood count to see if the immune cells or white immune cells are off due to inflammation. Ferritin or iron stores that can be elevated when inflammation is high. It could look falsely higher than it is. So you want to get the other iron markers tested, like an iron panel, total iron binding capacity, et cetera. And your vitamin D levels measured, as Tony mentioned, because that is such a key one. A lot of people are surprised to hear that the three major symptoms of vitamin D deficiency is infection, depression, and pain. And I'm still seeing people that are maybe, you know, 78 is their 25 hydroxy vitamin D blood level, when 75 and lower is considered low. And you want to aim for about 125 as your value on the blood test, not how much you're taking every day. Your doctor can then tell you how much you need. But that can give you insight into if inflammation is going to be higher. And depending on where the pain is, you know, your doctor, your naturopath may order an autoimmune blood panel to see if there's actually like immune dysregulation where the immune system is attacking different parts of the body. That can be useful as well. But getting a full workup just to see, even if you have hypothyroidism, if you have elevated antibodies to the thyroid, any sort of antibodies elevated is an inflammatory sign. You want to get liver check, kidney check, blood sugar levels, fasting insulin, hemoglobin A1C. You know, there's so many things, B12. We want to set your body up so that it has what it needs to put out the fires of chronic inflammation, that there's no dysregulation of the immune system that then can be addressed through nutrition, supplements, and herbs. Because I know a lot of my patients too find when they're eating foods that are inflammatory to them, gluten, sugar, some people it's dairy, some people notice, you know, obviously with processed foods, you know, there's a whole list of anti-inflammatory foods that everybody's different, but it adds fuel to the fire. I know if I have sugar, if I have gluten, I feel more achy for a couple of days after. It takes a little while to downregulate that inflammation. What about you, Tony? What do you notice aggravates any sort of aches or pains in your body?
Oh, yeah, for sure. If I am letting those foods sneak in too much, absolutely, I will feel more achy, more sluggish. And I notice this a lot in a lot of women who come to see me. Definitely, you know, those are the top ones really are gluten or other components in wheat, dairy, and really excess added sugars. Not necessarily, you know, all fruit or anything like that, but really more of the high levels of added sugar or even the high fructose corn syrup in processed foods, that kind of thing, that we know overall high levels of sugar will promote inflammation in the body. And just again, some people are more sensitive to that than other people. And, you know, to, you know, something that is important, again, getting a full workup is important because we don't want to just assume, oh, well, you know, you have this injury or you this is what's happened and you're just more achy. You know, even looking at, you know, going to see a family doctor or a specialist to, you know, look at, do you need to get an x-ray, an ultrasound, a CT scan, a bone scan, an MRI, just to look at that imaging to really see what's happening physically in your body. And then also, okay, do we want to look at your hormone levels and get a full hormone panel to see, okay, what's exactly going on? And of course, we've talked about this before in terms of looking at, you know, doing something like the Dutch test, which is a urine test, versus looking at your blood levels. And absolutely where you are in your cycle matters in terms of those levels too. So those are all, you know, some tests to really look at, gain a really full workup, a full assessment to see what's going on instead of, again, just assuming, just guessing. You know, let's test instead of just guess.
For sure. And even just based on your signs and symptoms, right? If you're still getting a period, sometimes when your hormones drop right before your period comes, like most people feel so achy and tired, flu-like symptoms, the inflammation is definitely higher. So you can feel those cyclical changes. If your periods are unpredictable, it might be a warning sign when you feel that way for a couple of days or a day that your period is coming. But there's so many great ways to get an idea of what's happening with your hormones. You know, it's a snapshot in time, but it is a snapshot in time of what's happening to your hormones. And that can be so useful. And that's why more people are moving to support by using hormonal replacement therapy to keep the hormone levels steady, right? So there isn't that abrupt drop in estrogen and progesterone that then contribute to worsening of pain symptoms. So more women are using progesterone, oral micronized vaginal micronized progesterone, topical estrogen. We're using this a little more frequently in perimenopause now too, as the cycles are starting to become really irregular and there's signs of low estrogen, just to help keep a natural level of those hormones so that you don't have that drop and that worsening of pain. But there's so many great, you know, some people at this stage are starting to pop a lot of Advil, of Tylenol, and they can have their own issues associated with them, right? We know those NSAIDs like Advil can wreak havoc on the gut. Tylenol can be really hard on the liver. So there's a time and a place, and we can delete glutathione from that, which we need as an anti-inflammatory and a detoxifier. So you can actually take glutathione to replace that through, you know, nebulizing, breathing in, through IV therapy, through taking precursors of it. But we want to make sure, you know, you're having other solutions. Maybe you need that Advil or Tylenol sometimes to get through, but there's so many great anti-inflammatory herbs and supplements that I know we've talked about a lot in other episodes, like vitamin D we talked about. Omega-3 is very anti-inflammatory. You want a fish or algae source. The flaxseed oil source doesn't have enough of the active or most potent anti-inflammatory components of omega-3. Getting in more ginger and turmeric in your diet as well as in supplement form are options. Boswellia is a great herb. Bromelain from the stem of pineapples, they have that in supplement form. Glucosamine, MSM, depending on if there's structural changes to the joints as well, right? Sometimes we need to add in glucosamine. We need to add in natural eggshell membrane. NEM is a good one I see a lot for knee pain. It's a supplement you can take. Maybe collagen as structural support. These can all be so beneficial. And then there's a substance called PEA. I always have a hard time saying it. Pamidylethanolamide, I believe that's how you say it. So that activates the cannabinoid receptors. And we know there's been so much talk about CBD to help reduce pain because we do have an endocannabinoid system in the body that is influenced by sleep deprivation and hormones as well. So there's options depending on where is that disruption for you. And it could be at more than one place, right? It could be at a systemic inflammatory level, at the cannabinoid receptor level. Is it actually causing degradation of the joints and you need that structural support? So these can be all options to talk to your naturopathic doctor, your healthcare provider about. You don't want to go and take all these things because that's going to be overload, and different supplements and herbs sometimes aren't right for you. It's got to be individualized, but lots of good options out there, right, Tony?
Absolutely. And you know, we talked about, again, the minerals that we need to really help to support our biochemistry, how our cells signal, all of that, talking about hormonal support. And again, that can be prescription. That could also be herbal. Even looking at, again, managing stress, supporting our adrenal glands, supporting our thyroid to really have that proper balance of our anti-inflammatory cortisol, that proper support of production of our T4 and converting into T3 in our body. And yeah, we can absolutely, you know, support that with how we eat, having an anti-inflammatory diet, even the foods that contain, have sulfur containing properties to it, you know, like broccoli sprouts have been shown to really help with that. And again, you mentioned, you know, working our muscles, like really building up our muscle mass so that there's less wear and tear on our joints when we are supporting our muscle mass, as well as, again, on the whole piece of sleep recovery. All of those are key. And also, like, really paying attention to what's happening physically with our body. You can get so much different body work and support for your structural system, whether that's massage, whether that's chiropractic, osteopathy, physiotherapy, craniosacral, Bowen. I'm a big fan of acupuncture and cupping and dry needling, as well as light therapy as well, has been shown to influence that circulation and that nitric oxide production too. So all of these are things to really consider of, like, what is the kind of support that would be helpful for you to keep your body functioning physically as well, you know, as on all levels too.
Totally agree on hydrotherapy, cold water therapy, cold plunges, cold showers. Really helps to reduce the inflammation and pain as well. And that's becoming, you know, a really popular treatment or something to take part in. So that's an option as well, because you also get a release of dopamine, of the feel-good hormones. So that can be an option, different types of hydrotherapy too, depending on the pain, the inflammation, where it's at and what's contributing to it, right? There's so many different ways to use hydrotherapy, with hot and cold application or purely cold, or using various different temperatures in the shower. aromatherapy can be so useful. You just want to, there's lots of options out there, and you want to make sure what you're doing is appropriate for where you are with your pain. Because if you have nerve pain, for example, you don't want to do cold therapy because you're not going to feel when it gets, to the point where you need to get out. Like sometimes we have to be careful, right? Depending on the pain, although we are talking about musculoskeletal pain. And I always wonder too, if people are taking painkillers because, they have to get through the day. Let's say they have a physical job and they're taking painkillers and they're still doing the repetitive motion that possibly contributed or caused the pain, that's going to lead to more degeneration and degradation over time. But I know you got to do what you got to do, but pain is there for a reason. So hopefully we can also address it outside of that kind of numbing the pain, or else, down the road, it could be a worse problem.
I think that's an important point to even kind of end on today, Lisa, is, why are you experiencing pain? You don't just want to reduce the pain, take care of the pain. It is about knowing what it's there and what your body is trying to tell you so that you don't ignore that signal and do something that's going to be more, detrimental to you, and so that you're in a worse spot overall. Absolutely. That's a really important piece to think about and ask the question, why? Why is it
and
there?
And Tony,
what's happening?
Yeah, we forgot to mention, you have a really good tool that I think is used for pain, right? Hypnotherapy.
Oh my God. Of course. And again, that there is that mind body piece of it, that really impacts your nervous system regulation, how you perceive things, because we know our perception really does impact things. Like you mentioned already, if you have a higher pain threshold, you are going to feel differently about it. Again, I've talked about it so many times where even thinking about, so often people compare, the worst pain in the world, how does it compare to childbirth? Well, funnily enough, I don't use the word pain to describe my birthing experience with Frankie. So again, that's super subjective. Again, there was some intense sensations. And again, it's so subjective, and that perception is so key. And of course, we can tap into that with harnessing the power of our mind as well. So thanks for pointing that.
No, Tony. So I think we did a great overview of what's actually happening during perimenopause and into menopause, why you can have more pain. And we hope you feel empowered to reach out to your healthcare provider, to your naturopath, to investigate some of these solutions, because you don't have to feel that way, right? You can feel better. You can get through the day with less pain or potentially pain-free. So I think we're ready to move to the next part of the podcast, Tony. Do you think we covered everything?
I think we did. I really think we did, Lisa. So why don't you share a supermom moment with us?
Sure, Tony. I've been really learning to listen to my body and not push 100%, 7 days a week. And this has been a process over the last 5 years, or I guess I should say 7 years after Stuart was born. We did not take time off for March break, and Stuart was at a camp, but we had the ability to slow down a little bit. We didn't have to rush out in the morning. We could sleep in a little bit, which was, good with the time change. So took it a little bit easier, and we're a bit more relaxed with our schedule. And I even was able to pick up Stuart early one of the days, although we went to a dentist appointment, but we did something fun after. But it just felt good to just take a breath, look at the routine, and press the easy button. So that was awesome. I'm feeling rejuvenated, even though I didn't have technically time off, but I'm feeling way, way better than I did before the official March break for everybody else. But Tony, I know you're doing an awesome job, but can you think of a mama mess up?
Yes, I can, Lisa. Now, we haven't had our March break over here yet. So, and with being Frankie still in school and having St. Patrick's Day falling on Sunday, I didn't even think about St. Patrick's Day activities at our school. I didn't think about whether she would want to wear green on the Friday before St. Patrick's Day. Again, that's, I don't know if that's just a North American thing of wearing green on St. Patrick's Day or not. But anyway, Frankie, and we're in a routine where Frankie chooses her clothes. She just goes and gets dressed, and that's fine. I'm cool with that. So when she got dressed on the Friday, I didn't think about it. As soon as I took her to school and dropped her off and saw everyone wearing green, you know, we kind of looked at each other and then it was like, okay, well, oopsies. I didn't push the subject. I didn't even think to push the subject. So a bit of a mess up, although really in the long run, she wasn't that bothered by it, it didn't seem. So, you know, just maybe a mess up that wasn't really a mess up and just something to let go of and not worry about. So there you go.
You know, it's such a fun age when they dress themselves, right? When they finally just can go in and pick their clothes. Although I have to, you know, get rid of some of Stuart's short ripped pants that he keeps gravitating to. Because when we get to school, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're wearing those pants. I should have thrown them out.
Yeah, that happened to me as well this week too.
Well, you're still doing a great job, Tony.
Thanks, Lisa. So Lisa, what's your mama must have for this week?
Yeah, I guess I got to have a shout out for my Costco membership. I'm a full-on Costco mom, I guess. Never thought that would happen, but here I am. But I love it because, like, not only do they have good selections of organic food, and it makes me eat even more vegetables than I normally would, but I get stuff there for Stuart's loot bags for his birthday party, get things for the holidays. You know, I always find really good things on sale. Like, I found, like, a MIPS certified bike helmet, which is, like, a really top-rated helmet for myself and Pete there. That was, like, a ridiculous price, like a third of the price from Sport Check. We've gotten some ski gear, like balaclavas on sale. I always say baklavas, but this time I said it correctly. So balaclavas. but I'm just always surprised at what I can find even outside of food, even some of their workout clothes, their leggings, their socks. Like, it's just such a good deal and so convenient to just do all at once. Although coming out, it's easy to have a $400 bill, which gives me a little bit of palpitations, but I know I'm saving in the long term for the most part. So that's my mama must have. And Tony, what's yours?
While I'm also a Costco fan and get a lot of like fun stuff there, like, you know, my chia seeds and my hemp seeds and that kind of thing, I also will, you know, do some local shopping. And especially when it comes to a body butter. So I am a fan not only of Costco, but also going to farmers markets. And I love finding just local makers of body butters with shea butter. That I am just such, I love rubbing that on my feet. It is fantastic to prevent dry skin and especially the cracking on the heels. Which, again, we are more concerned about kind of when we get into summer and wearing sandals and that kind of thing. But I'm such in such a routine of putting that body butter on my feet, after I shower, after I have a bath, putting some socks on, and just, it's so moisturizing and so lovely. So that's my mama must have for the week.
I love it, Tony. I got to start hydrating that area because, yeah, hopefully sandal season's here sooner rather than later, although it doesn't feel like it right now. And Tony, what do you have going on?
Well, I do have my self-hypnosis class coming up next month. So go to our show notes. You can find the link and use a code for a special deal on self-hypnosis to support your hormone balance and relaxation. And thanks, everyone, for listening today. Again, you can check out our show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com, as well as wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can email us, connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode, as well as telling your perimenopausal mamas about us too. So stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.